It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Bike, baby, be flopping!
Feels good to be on this side.
Shut up. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook.
And he's on Facebook right now.
No, I'm not actually. The show is also available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. We also have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Snide voice you just heard is
Snide.
Is somebody who is not on behind the board. He's over where I'm normally sitting. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
I'm your host, Matthew Soze. And it is such a busy day. Every now and then this happens where I have to be at the helm. Not by choice, really, but it's just how it is. Of course, today is two more days of Silent
Web. Two more days of Silent Web Week. We're breaking the silence of Silent Web Week right now.
Right, because right now Steve Inskeep of NPR fame is calling in and talking to Lloyd Wright, but that really has nothing to do with film sociology.
No.
But we're just reminding you that this is Pledge Dollars at Work right here.
Yes, and so. If you have not made a pledge during Silent Web Week, you should do so because it ends Sunday, and anybody that makes a pledge will automatically be entered in a drawing to win the brand new Apple iPad. Pledges encouraged, but not required. Details at WFYI.org, but that is going on until Sunday. So
it's going on until Sunday, and of course we start the regular drive.
Yep, Monday morning, morning edition.
There you go. So anyway, that's kind of why Kobe's bouncing back and forth as he pleases.
Get to hang out in the studio together a bunch.
Yeah, a little bit. And so I thought, and besides, we had such a big response to my interview with Rich Coase, the collaborative effort between Abdul-Hakim Shabazz, the kids' film correspondent, that would be Emma, and myself. It went over so big that we've decided to air it again. And now, to be fair, will this break the Tommy Wiseau record? I think we played him 5 times in 6 months. I'm trying to remember because we did.
Well, see, I mean, there's that. Okay, that's another thing. That's one interview, but we've also had Robert Irvine on like five times in a year, but like two or three of them were within a couple weeks of each other.
Well, and part of that was to preview the Sweeney Fox
when he was
episode
when he was here.
Yeah. So, and the other times because, well, he lets me. he said those famous words, "Call me anytime."
Yep.
And I do. But that sounds really stalkery. No, we're friends. We're mates. I heard from so many people that lived in the Chicagoland area and northern Indiana that grew up listening to and watching Sven and listening to Rich and watching Rich as well, because he does that on WCIU to you, that we're gonna air it again. So just to remind folks, if you have MeTV, which is I believe WTHR's 13.3,
mm-hmm.
On Saturday nights, you can see Sven Gulli, aka Rich Coase, and they're showing the Universal catalog of horror movies, and it runs the gamut because last week they showed the scientific thriller. It's technically seven S's. And it starred.
Is there going to be any cool like blaxploitation stuff like Blackula and Black Frankenstein and?
I'll get to that.
All that.
I'll get to that.
Okay.
I was saying last week's film, which starred Struther Martin and Dirk Benedict for you A-Team fans out there, and a girl who was one of the Von Trapp kids in Sound of Music was also in this film, looking like Bailey from WKRP because it was 1973. 70s were a different time.
Different time.
Different look.
Different look, different time, different all kind of stuff.
And compared to the 70s people in Once in a Lifetime, these are better groomed. That's an inside joke between Kobe and I. It will be brought up on a future film sociology. But tomorrow night on MeTV, they are showing the original Dracula with Bela Lugosi. Gonna be fun. Which was fun because a couple of weeks ago, they showed Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which featured Bela Lugosi as the Frankenstein monster, Frankenstein creation. So
the monster is not named Frankenstein.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, we're that show. We're that show that tells you that. And we're also the show that tells you John Carter is not losing money because it's making money elsewhere, just not in the United States.
Where?
Europe?
Oh.
Asia? Why do you think Sly and Arnold were still making movies in the 90s? Because of overseas.
Yeah.
See, box office receipts, it's not just for Hollywood anymore. And I also want to give a special shout-out to Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap, who's been on this campaign as well, saying it's not the biggest bomb in the world. It's kind of like Waterworld. It didn't make money here. It made it elsewhere. But there's a lot of Hollywood.
There's no room for box office numbers in this water world.
And for a lot of folks, especially members of the Hollywood press, apparently, if you don't make money here, you don't make it anywhere. And to quote Mike Gundy, that ain't true.
That ain't true.
Get your facts straight. So anyway, Sven Gulli is on MeTV Saturday nights at 10 o'clock. They're going to be showing Dracula. I did ask him about blaxploitation horror films because, as you know, I'm a big fan of those. And not on MeTV yet, but I know on the regular Sven Gulli program, which is Saturday nights up in Chicago and I believe Northern Indiana, I'm making hand gestures to Kobe to make my point because I need to put my hand up when I'm showing Northern Indiana because we're in Central Indiana. But he has shown Blackula before.
Cool.
And he has not seen Blackenstein or Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde or Abby or J.D.'s Revenge, or Sugar Hill. Not the Wesley Snipes gangster movie. There was a zombie movie called Sugar Hill in the mid-70s. And guess what? Guess who owns all of them on DVD?
I bet you do.
This guy.
Do you own I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka?
Yes, I do. Yes,
I want to see that. I saw that in a movie store one time, and I was shocked.
You have not seen it?
No. I saw the title. I was like, no way. There's a movie called that. That's kind of cool.
It was a well-made spoof by the Wayans brothers back when they were funny.
Oh.
Before In Living Color. Mm. So, okay, I'm going to add to Kobe's list.
I'm gonna get you, sucker.
You sucker. For Kobe. That's good. Yeah, the Wayans brothers had Jim Brown, Isaac Hayes. So, great story was Fred Williamson was offered a part in that and he turned him down.
Mm.
Thought they were making fun of his bread and butter. Was offended that they were making a movie like this. I know. Cool story, bro. And I'll tell you what, if I add this, then you have to watch Black Dynamite as well.
Okay.
Because that's another blaxploitation spoof that looks more like the films that were made back then compared to I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. You know what? You could do a compare contrast.
It'll be a nice study in contrast.
It will be a study in contrast of blaxploitation spoofs. That is what you get here at Film Sociology on HD2, your pledge dollars at work. So be ready for that. I think next week we will be doing a preview of the Wet Your Pants Film Festival, the Comedy Film Festival, and Gina Wagner will be all in right. studio because I know she in her other life when she's not wanting to party
when
and wanting
she's
to
not
samba, she's in the roller derby.
Yeah.
So she's going to talk about an upcoming match by your roller derby with her roller derby team. I don't think we have an official roller derby team here at Film Sociology.
No, we don't.
I probably would.
We have a sports department, news department.
We'll have to talk.
We don't have any athletics. We need some athletics.
Gosh, that means we have to pay athletes.
Well,
are we pro or amateur? Oh, that's another rant. That's just we're not going to use right now. Not now. Another time, maybe. Just not now.
Okay.
I think right now, until otherwise, I think the California T-Birds are my because it was 70s and 80s and big hair. Anyway. Not what modern roller derby is all about today, I assure you. So Gina will be on the show next week, as well as we'll talk a little bit about the Wet Your Pants Film Festival. And yeah, I did do another interview with Rich Coes, more one-on-one. Makes it sound like the Frost Nixon papers. But we'll air that a little later on. So anyway, long intro.
Look at all this stuff that you have to look forward to. More with Rich Coes, the study in contrast, blaxploitation spoofs.
By Kobe.
Yes, by me.
What is Kobe watching? The academic version of what is Kobe watching. And you have to get Fair Sweet Bianca on because it's time for another session of Dr. Soci Film Therapist.
Okay.
So I am personally in putting out an invite to Fair Sweet Bianca. And I will try not to make it a gotcha questioning line of questioning. Although you kind of know a little of why I'm asking her to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll discuss that when she is here. And I have my tweed jacket or my corduroy jacket with the elbow patches. Dr. Soci Film Therapist. So all of those are coming up on future Film Sociology.
Exciting things happening here in HD2.
Always happening at HD2.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? HD1 suffers from HD2 envy.
Ah!
The point envy. So, all right. Enough of that nonsense. After this interview with this encore interview with Rich Coes done by Abdul-Kim Shabazz, as well as kids film correspondent Emma Soci. Oh, by the way, big shout out to the cast and crew of Skin of Our Teeth, going on at Earlham College tonight and tomorrow afternoon, featuring Emma Soci, directed by my wife, Lynn.
Yeah.
So thank you to Lynn. And to the Lawrence Central. Is it Lawrence Central? No, Lawrence North. Sorry.
Ow.
Sorry. The Lawrence North production of The Glass Menagerie that's happening tonight as well. But here we go. I'll be talking a little bit about the film Bully after this interview. And The Iron Lady is out on DVD and Blu-ray as well. And if there's time, what is Kobe watching, if he's not too busy? But we'll get to that in a little bit. But here is my encore interview with Rich Coes of Svengoolie, which you can see Saturday nights on MeTV, Saturday nights at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow night they are showing the original, the great Dracula, with Bela Lugosi, not the sad one with Gary Oldman. Sad but not worthless, we'll just put it that way. Anyway, here's Abdul, Emma, and myself with Rich Coes. Enjoy. All right, Emma, you start things off. You're ladies first, and you're the youngest, so...
So, as Svengoolie, do you have a pattern of what movies you show?
Yeah, we have to actually schedule them way ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
because we got this special package from Universal's library, and those movies have not run in a lot of cities on broadcast TV in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to actually set up our schedule about, you know, at the beginning of the 2-year run to get it all in organized.
Okay. Another question I have is, where did you get Kerwin from?
Well, actually, Kerwin was created by somebody who works with us here. And it was actually a surprise to me. Nobody told me about it. It was like a gift. Kerwin is made out of several different components. One is like one of those sort of alligator-type toys that you get at zoos where it's just the head and you pull the trigger and his mouth moves,
mm-hmm.
and a rubber chicken. And Jessica Hope Carlton, who works on one of the children's shows here at our stations,
yeah.
actually put him together and created him. And we decided that with his look with those eyes and the goofy teeth and everything, that he was kind of like young Jerry Lewis, which is why he kind of talks like this.
Yeah.
So are we going to see Kerwin in the Day the Clown Cried?
I could only hope. Please let me out of this concentration camp.
Okay, I'm sorry. Continue with your questions, Emma. Sorry.
When you're not on duty, what kind of movies do you like to watch?
Wow, you know, it's funny because I like a lot of different types of movies for different reasons. I do like old classics, you know, the black and white ones from the 30s and 40s, and I'm always interested in seeing them. I especially like seeing, you know, like the sort of 40s and 50s detective movies and such. I really like seeing those. But I do like horror movies. I don't know that I like all of the horror movies that come out now that are a lot of blood and guts and things like that, and a lot of shaky camera movement because, quite honestly, I get seasick real easily from that. But I have to say, yeah, I like comedies, and I do like all the superhero movies. I'm especially looking forward to The Avengers coming out.
And then my last question is, have you ever met Sammy Terry?
No, I never have. I never had the opportunity to do so. I know of him, but I have never met him.
Okay, Emma, can the grown-ups now do the interview?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Does that mean I have to leave?
No, you stay. It's...
Oh, I'm one of the grown-ups now. Okay.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Now, I say, like I said, Abdul grew up in Chicago. I grew up in Flint, Michigan, so I got to see your brief stint on Channel 50 in Detroit.
Okay,
so,
sure.
Back in the early 80s. So I guess we'll start with, how did you get involved with television?
I actually, it's an odd story and something that doesn't happen all the time. I was a fan of Jerry G. Bishop, who was a radio and TV personality here in Chicago, and he actually was the original Svengoolie on WFLD here in town. And it started out just as a voiceover thing because he happened to be the announcer who was on duty during the time they were running horror movies on Friday nights. And he kind of created this character that at first was just done voiceover and then eventually graduated to, you know, being a full video show with the video reps and such. And I was in Northwestern University at the time and was just a fan of his from both his radio and TV stuff and started sending him material because he would, you know, read jokes from people that were sent in. And he learned a little bit about what I was doing, going to school for broadcasting and such. And he liked some of the stuff I wrote, and he started to say, hey, could you write a parody of, you know, some sort of commercial that was on the air at the time or something? And I did that, and he'd request specific bits, and eventually I ended up working with him on the show. And that was how I got into this. And along the way, we worked together in radio and did various things. And at one point, he was getting set to move out to San Diego, where he had a TV gig lined up, and he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, maybe I'll try to, you know, pitch somebody here on a local TV show or something. He said, I tell you what, if you want to be son of Svengoolie, I'll give you my blessing and you can do it. This was something that we had talked about because there was a chance of doing that one summer during the time that he was still in town here, and nothing ever happened with it, and it kind of fell through. But he said, you know, if you want to try doing it, go ahead. And I did, and I chopped it around to a bunch of stations, and the bottom line was eventually one of them took me in, and I started in 1979 on WFLD in Chicago.
And this is going to sound really weird, Rich, but I actually remember growing up your first episode. Don't ask me why I remember this, because I'm just my total inner dorkdom. The first movie you guys showed was in the year 2889.
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Ding.
That is exactly right.
Because it was that really bad, horrible end of the world. We live like the radiation, but the mountains keep them out. And there was the woman whose husband turned into the creature thing. It was just really bad. But for some strange reason, it sticks just like yesterday.
It was a very weak movie. And the funny thing was, all the ads for that at the time, I was going to be son of Svengoolie, and some of the people at the station said, "Well, that's no good. You have to have a real name." And so the ads just said, "Featuring our new host."
Wow. Oh, man.
And I eventually convinced him, just use the son of Svengoolie name. People will recognize it. That's what happened when you have management who have, you know, just come into town 2 years before, you know, you start the show or something. They had no idea of the history.
What did you learn the most from Jerry when it comes to television?
Wow. I learned an awful lot working with him, both in TV and radio. One thing that I learned was that you have to be very, very aware of how important your crew is. And he always treated them with a great deal of respect and understood what all their jobs were, which actually made the whole production go much better. And, you know, I've seen at various other places that I worked, you know, people who, you know, acted like they were the big star and they didn't have to worry about this stuff. And, you know, that kind of connection with the people that you work with was so important, and it made everything work better. And, it, you know, it also made the people who worked with him, you know, have a kind of loyalty to him. And you could notice that right away, that they cared about what they were doing. And that wasn't the case on every show that they worked on. So that was a very important thing I learned from him, along with all sorts of things about just comic timing and acting and reacting to things.
So how did you guys, because like I said, you know, just what I remember, you know, growing up watching, then some of the clips that you see on YouTube, you know, what was the creative process like? Did you guys like, okay, it's Monday, the show's going to air Saturday, here are the jokes, here's the bit we're going to do with Doug and with Zaman T. Stone Jr., and here's that Go Hawaiian transfusion commercial we're going to do?
Basically, I'd screen the movie, and then I'd you know, just start writing it. I'd just write it myself. I'd figure out a song and tell Doug which song we were going to play so he could learn it, and that was before I even had the words for it. We'd just figure out how much of the song we were going to do. And, you know, it's always been the first time that I actually try singing the song is in the studio right before we record it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was it. It was basically, you know, I'd screen the movie, I'd write it, and then we'd go in usually near the end of the week and record the show. And, you know, we'd just record the bits. We didn't roll in the movie. And that was the process. And we did it mostly along the lines of live to tape. So back then there wasn't too much editing done on the show at all. It was like whatever we did in the studio. That's why sometimes in those old clips you'll see something that's like a technical mistake or something, and it was just like, well, we don't have time to do it again.
No, Jeff Bridges says there are no mistakes. Those are gifts.
Yes, exactly. I'll go along with that.
But what's cool is watching both of you is how long these single takes are. I mean, it's, you know, to be able to – no cutaways, nothing like that. It just, I remember there was one where Jerry was walking around a used car lot, and I know you have lots of monologues for your bits. And you know, is it usually one, two takes when you get those?
Really, yeah, it is, for the most part. We do everything just, you know, first of all, we don't have the time to do a lot of, you know, very extensive blocking and going through it over and over again. It's a matter of, you know, just with the economy at any TV station, it's like you have to get in there, get things done, and get out of the way for whatever has to happen next. And, yeah, pretty much that's why at times there are things that are, shall we say, gifts that show up in the things that we do. Because, you know, if it's something that I think, you know, the audience appreciates that. I mean, if it's really something major that doesn't quite work, we'll start again. But most of the time, we manage to get everything through there.
So I have to ask you, did you ever get any grief from Solosian Edelson or the Empire Carpet Guy?
We never got any grief from Solosian Edelson, but we did get grief once or twice from the Empire Carpet Guy, and it was not from the company. It was from him personally. I mean, I don't like to speak ill of the dead, but I always got the feeling that Lynn Haldren, the Empire Carpet Man, did not enjoy the fact that I was imitating him. And he once actually had me do an actual Empire commercial where I played a bunch of different parts, not him, of course. And I think he thought that if he had me do that commercial, that I would stop, you know, making fun of Empire and him. But I guess that didn't happen.
Because I think the bit was you did, like, you know, the vampire carpet guy. You know?
Right, that was it, exactly. Yeah, I don't think he really cared for it. I mean, the times that I met him, he was very civil and very nice, but I just got the feeling that maybe it kind of bothered him a little bit that I was imitating him.
How about the town of Berwyn? How did that start?
How about the town of Berwyn? The town of Berwyn, that whole thing happened really because of two different things, that one of which I was not aware of at the time. Jerry had just come from Cleveland years before, where he was on TV against Ernie Anderson, Goularty, a very famous mm-hmm. horror host. And Ernie Anderson used to make fun of a local suburb of Cleveland called Parma. And so that was one thing Jerry thought of. And also, at the time that Jerry was doing his show, that was when Roland Martin's Laughing was kind of winding down.
Right.
But they were still making their jokes, as was Johnny Carson, about beautiful downtown Burbank, and would make, like, small-town jokes about it. And he wanted to have some place that would be, like, an equivalent of that. And the little town of Berwyn that had a parade every year in honor of mushrooms, and who one of the main drags seemed to be all savings and loans and used car lots, seemed like the perfect place to use.
Wow. So I think Downers Grove and Wheaton are shaking their brows in relief.
And Aurora, it could have been us.
They're jealous, you know. Saying they're going, if only we could have been Berwyn.
So in the thousands of movies, you know, that you'd have to see and sit through and script, I'm assuming, you know, some would always be, you know, a little bit easier than others. But did there ever come a point where you're just sitting there and you're like, you know what? This is retarded. This is the most stupid movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, there have been a couple of them. One that we had for a brief time, I think it was called something like Midnight Movie Massacre. And the whole point was something where all these people went to this movie theater to watch a horror movie, and some sort of alien spacecraft landed on the roof and then went inside this alien and was killing people off. And it was just so incredibly bad with unfunny attempts at humor through much of it. And it was just a terrible movie. And, you know, we ran it, certainly, and I found ways to go around it. But it was one of the ones where I'm sitting there going, you know, if I had a chance, I would tell them no thank you on this one.
When did Svensaround begin?
Svensaround actually began, it's funny, because we really attribute that to Jerry, because he didn't call it that back then. But when he happened to be the announcer on duty, he was a staff announcer as well as, you know, playing Svengoolie and doing talk shows and stuff, he'd still draw duty on Friday nights when he had the show on. And just to amuse himself and the guys that were working there, they would pull out his collection of sound effects and add them in during the movie. I always thought that was so hilarious. And then when I started, the very first week the movie was short, and they said, well, you can do like a tease for the next movie. So they pulled the reels of that, and actually it was a movie that ended up never running because the general manager after the first week said, we got to show and give this guy better movies. But the movie tease did air at the end of that first, in the year 2889, and what they did was they just ran a portion of it, and they superimposed me in the corner, which sounds remarkably like Mystery Science Theater. And I just was making smart cracks through the whole thing. And then along the way, there were times when we did special shows. We didn't really get to drop stuff into most of the shows because the station worked very differently from when Jerry was there. We did a couple special things, like where we would do Svensaround during just one scene of the movie. And that we did when we first came here to the station at now, where I've been doing the show now for almost 16 years. And after that, we got to the point where there were times when we could, you know, just take certain little scenes from the movie so as not to mess up the whole movie, especially if it was a good movie. And we'd redub lines and add things in along the way. And every so often now, we'll still throw, you know, a little sound effect in here and there through the whole movie.
Yeah, because I was going to ask.
Your sound effects collection is amazing. We want a box set of it.
Just so I can do the just so I can do the Berwyn thing.
Well, and you mentioned random ones. We were watching The Mole People. What a perfect soundbite after the end of that long, boring academic monologue of, oh, shut up, will you?
Yeah. Well, back when I was at FLD, when I was son of Svengoolie, we actually chroma keyed me into that scene. Now, I was standing in the background while he was giving his whole speech, and I don't remember exactly what I did because it's been a long time. But we didn't have the time to do that, unfortunately, on this run.
So how easy, difficult was it to take the son of Svengoolie from Channel 32 WFLD TV over to the U?
Actually, not that difficult at all, really, because there was time in between. I ended, or actually they ended, the Son of Svengoolie show right before they became a Fox station in 1986, because, you know, that wasn't suitable for a fine network that they were going to have.
What, Sven is fair and balanced? What are you talking about?
Trust me, I'd much rather take the Son of Svengoolie than Bill O'Reilly and Morton Downey Jr. any day. So.
Well, that was when their main gun was going to be the late-night Joan Rivers show.
Oh yeah. Talk about terrifying.
Yeah. And so I was out of there then. Then I came back and I did the show The Co-Zone, which was at first just me as myself doing a movie-hosted show, and that evolved into me hosting Three Stooges shorts. And then when the Fox network decided that they were going to have hosted kids blocks of shows, that fell to me. So I was there. But then it was, you know, between 1986, I did the Spin Stuff in 1995 at Channel 26 in Chicago. And by that time, you know, nobody from management was even around who had been at FLD during that time, so they didn't know anything. Not that they had any right to it anyway.
How did the deal with MeTV begin?
Oh, that's kind of cool. Our boss, Neil Saban, has always been like a real, you know, guy who looked towards the future and came up with unusual ideas. And when he first established WCIU as the U here in Chicago in 1995, previously it had been, you know, a Spanish language station.
And a stock market station.
Yes, they ran the Stock Market Observer every day with stock market news all day from the morning right through to about 2:30 in the afternoon. And he had convinced the folks in charge here that he could make it into a viable independent station, and he did. And he continued to work on other stations for them and came up with the idea for this network since, you know, TV land was no longer really what it set out to be with the classic TV shows and
Agreed.
Such.
Yeah,
and he said, you know, we could do this, and he worked very hard to establish, you know, enough contacts and enough people around the country that we could actually make this a real network. He got, you know, people that you would never expect. He talked to Carl Reiner, and Carl Reiner was so impressed with the idea that that was why he allowed us to run the Dick Van Dyke shows. He believed in what, you know, in the fact that we really cared about these shows.
Now, did you have to invite him over for dinner and then hilarity ensues?
Oh, no, they had him over actually for a big event tied in with the Museum of Broadcasting here. And nobody tripped over any ottomans or anything like that or stole his toupee. But, it was really cool because he really appreciated the fact that we cared about the shows that we were showing.
Now, is it strictly Universal with MeTV?
Right now it is. That may change in the future. I know that, from what I can tell, people are very pleased with the Universal stuff. I know a lot of people ask about, you know, more B-type movies, and that may make its way in eventually. But right now, I think that's one of the draws. I think, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the Universal stuff has not aired on free over-the-air broadcast TV in decades in a lot of cities. And we're kind of bringing this to a new audience, and it's been very well received. And right now, MeTV is on in about 80% of the country, and that happened in just about a year's time, which is pretty amazing.
Well, all I ask, my friend, is that if you ever show Zontar, the Thing from Venus, please email Matt Sosi so I can be there to watch. That movie was awesome.
I have to tell you, we are running that this month on one of our other local stations here just in the Chicago area on YouTube.
Okay, I have to tell my dad to set the DVR to record it.
Definitely. It's at 3 o'clock on YouTube, one of these upcoming Saturdays, so tell him to be prepared for that.
One of the things I've really enjoyed watching with the MeTV broadcast is that you've kind of become also an ambassador, not only for old movies, but you occasionally bring up other hosts from different markets. And I mean, this is a lost art. So I'm really happy that you've kind of grabbed the torch on this one.
Well, it is interesting because even when I was just doing the show here in Chicago, it became very evident that, you know, the horror movie host, it kind of was, as some people were putting it, it's like a dinosaur, you know, almost extinct. And one of the reasons is the way that TV stations work these days. If you're going to do any sort of local programming, most of the time it's going to be news and public affairs and, you know, occasionally some sort of, like, wacky magazine show. Where can I find the best pizza in Chicago? Kind of stuff.
PM Magazine.
Nobody, nobody really did a sort of entertainment type show anymore just because they didn't feel it was economically viable. And yet the people that I work for here and Neil Saban, who I mentioned earlier, they believed in, you know, doing this homegrown type original stuff. And they said at the beginning, they said, you know, I'm not sure if we'll make money on this or not, but it's something we want to do because we think it's worth preserving. And so it has been, and now I've been lucky enough now to be able to do it nationally on the MeTV network. And meanwhile, there are not many people who are doing it just on broadcast TV. There's a handful, I think, around the country And for the most part, most of the hosts doing it are on like cable access in various cities.
Right. Now, have I heard? Did you wind up ever seeing the alter ego of your character on Glee?
Yes, I did. That was kind of unusual. I knew nothing about it, and one day somebody from our sales department brings in this article from a local paper saying, do you know about this? And it was quotes from the father of the creator of Glee, who grew up in this area, and it said, yeah, he's going to be doing this character based on Svengoolie. I think it's called Svengoolie or something. And it's like, okay. And I was like, wait a minute. So all of a sudden everybody's like, there's going to be a Svengoolie on Glee tonight? So people were watching, and, you know, it didn't look much like me, nor did he act much like me. But it was meant as like a nice little, you know, shout-out type thing.
No, I say you got a following with Glee. You got a following, because I know somebody from Mystery Science Theater grew up in the Chicago area, and now you got two major film nerds in Indiana. So you got to come to a convention down here.
Well, that's cool. It's nice. I don't know if I'm going to be doing too much traveling yet, but they keep talking about the fact that, you know, now that we're on all these cities, there's a good chance that people are going to want me to come out and do public appearances. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. It'll be interesting to meet all these people, because I'm getting a lot of emails from all over the country and Canada even. Somehow we've leaked into Canada.
Nice.
We'll have to check your baggage then.
And just as you were saying, a lot of these say we used to have, you know, fill in the blank here, you know, Dr. Dead Guy or whatever. In all these different markets, everybody had their own horror show host, and they were like, you know, it's been years since I've seen something like that, and it's so cool to have this back. And that's a nice compliment, because, you know, most people, when they see one of these hosts, it's like, you know, your first horror movie host is your favorite, and nobody can touch him.
Darn right. Rich Coe, Son of Svengoolie, rocks.
but it's nice that they've kind of, you know, adopted me and not said, you know, you suck, you know. Mr. Skullface was much better. So I think it's a real compliment that they've accepted the show and that we're hearing such nice compliments from around the country.
But Rich, thank you. Thank you so much. And of course, the three of us want to come and hurl chickens at you sometime.
I'm sure that could happen someday. We only do our shows now. Everybody thinks we do it once a week. But because of, you know, everything that goes on at this station, what we usually do now is we have a bunch of days where we'll do a bunch of shows, and then, you know, then they actually take the set down, which they never used to do, so that there's room for other things in the studios now and do that. So we do the sort of gang shooting type thing. So
don't say gang shooting. We had that down here.
Hey, Boogie Wooga Bugle Boy Berwin. Ta-da!
Very cool. Okay, thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So there you go. So nice we played it twice in 2 weeks. That is Abdul-Hakim Shabazz, kids film correspondent Emma Sosi, and yours truly interviewing Rich Coes, who is the host and brainchild of Svengoolie. Well, was Son of Svengoolie, and then he got the main title. But you can see Svengoolie Saturday nights at 10 o'clock on MeTV, which I believe here in town is WTHR's 13.3, but check with your local cable company and check that out. You can also go to Svengoolie.com, where there's stuff to read and to shop for, and Kerwin's Joke of the Week. And we are big fans of Svengoolie here at Film Sociology. I got to get Kobe into the realm of Svengoolie-ness. So first it'll be YouTube. And then you have to find 13.3 or MeTV on your cable channel too, fool.
Yeah.
So nice to have you back.
Hey,
at the helm.
It's good to be back. Good to be back. Missed the first half hour.
But we're here for the second half.
So we're here for the second half, and hopefully we're going to do better the second half of the show. And
what the hell are you talking about? So, of course, this is HD2, which is, of course, our toy. And we have new things to play with, so we have some new IDs that I want to share with you. Let's start with Rich.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, this is Rich Coes, and I just wanted you to know that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. It could have been in Berwyn, but it isn't.
Right.
Cool.
And then we got Sven. Well, one.
Hello there. I'm Sven Gulli from MeTV, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. If there's an Indian in Annapolis, it means that he's like, you know, a military type person from Native America.
It sounds like the same guy.
It is the same guy. Shut up.
Could you turn up the volume, please? You're not going to hear me if you don't know. Hello there. I'm Sven Gulli from ETV, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. FYI? FYI? And also, never mind.
That they remind me of Tommy's.
We'll get to it. Now, there's two characters, of course, that we talked about. There's what there's Kerwin, which Emma
Hello
asked
there.
About.
Hello there, this is Kerwin, the prehistoric rubber chicken from the Sven Gulli show on MeTV. And I wanted to remind you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis, which is like Indian no place.
Yeah, I think Tommy Wiseau and Kerwin could get along. So.
It'd be like you could do that game along with and follow that up with Foghorn Leghorn, Hank Hill, or Carl Malone.
Or James Carville. And now if you go on Sven Gulli's website, svengulli.com, you'll see a skull with a mustache. That's Tombstone. Here he is.
Well, hello there. My name is Zamantee Tombstone from the Sven Gulli program on MeTV, and I wanted to advise you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. I flunked sociology, so good luck.
He's so cool. Seriously, I asked one man to give me not one, but five show IDs, and he did, and we thank him for it. So Saturday nights, 10 o'clock, MeTV, WTHR 13.3 here in town. Check your local cable company. But tomorrow night, they are showing the original 1930s Bela Lugosi version of Dracula.
Oh, sorry. I hit the wrong.
You're an idiot. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to take a short break. Kobe, we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
And we're going to play the music from Blackula because you asked about it earlier. And when we come back after the break, my review of Bully and some other films that are out on DVD and Blu-ray. You are listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
And I just wanted you to know that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. It could have been in Berwyn, but it isn't.
I wonder what the Berwyn of Indianapolis is.
I don't know.
I have to work on that. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe Slagle is back at the helm, where he should be. It's okay, that sounded bad. It's just a better show that way. I had a good show.
Oh,
now we're
you.
Back to a great
a
show.
A great show.
We got a great show
every
for you tonight.
Every Friday.
Every Friday, great show. We got a great show for you. Betty Levette is here, and we'll be right back. No. No, this is the day that we have to record all the music, so you can't do that theme.
I can't do shotgun.
No, you can't do shotgun. I have to write it in. All right, we're going to shift gears for a little bit. We're kind of doing a reversal. We usually do the interviews on the second half of the show, but we open with the very fun interview with Rich Coase.
Tricked ya.
Yeah, tricked ya. Unpredictable here at HD2. Of course, Rich Coase is a.k.a. Svengoolie, which you can see Saturday nights at 10 o'clock on MeTV. That's 13.3 here in town. And check your local cable company for that information. You can also go to svengoolie.com. to see some more clips. And there's actually quite a few original Jerry G. Bishop Svengoolie clips on YouTube, as well as Rich as Sven. Okay, I want to start things off with, well, let's go through the movies that are already opening today. The thriller, The Cabin in the Woods.
Nope.
No, you're not seeing that?
Nope.
Gee, it's a scary movie. Of course you're not seeing it. The Three Stooges. Directed
nope.
by the Farrelly Brothers. Yeah. We have the action film Lockout with Guy Pearce.
Space Prison.
Space Prison, that's right. We have Blue Like Jazz. We also have a reissue of Woman Thar Out Loose, which is at AMC Showplace Washington Square 12. The Asian action film Raid the Redemption. And also opening is the documentary Bully, which follows the lives of several kids in this country that have various degrees of bullying. And we've talked about this film a little bit because I've talked about it, about the rating, the fact that the Weinsteins were going to take the film and make it unrated because the MPAA gave it an R rating. I'm going to save that for a little bit. Let's play the trailer, which I pulled up over there, Mr. Slagle. I had it ready.
I got it.
I've done this show a few times solo, but I prefer a duo. It's like, you know what it is? It's like Brad Meldow and Joshua Redman Wednesday which I saw and emceed Wednesday at the Jazz Kitchen. Only we're not nearly as talented as those guys. Anyway, here is the trailer for Bully.
The last couple of days, we had heard that Tyler had his head shoved into a wall locker. They said he is a geek.
My concern is that you were making someone feel so uncomfortable that they didn't want to be in school.
I feel kind of nervous going to school because I like learning, but I have trouble with making friends.
As I said, he is a geek. Some kids have told him that he's worthless to go hang himself. And I think he got to the point where enough was enough.
Tonight, a tragic situation.
A Perkins boy, just 11 years old, believed to have been desperate enough to take his own life.
This is an awfully complicated and difficult issue.
Kids will be kids. Boys will be boys. They're just cruel at this age.
Here, what we get is nothing's wrong. We didn't do anything. Everything's fine.
They punch me, strangle me, take things from me, sit on me.
Give it to him hard!
He's not safe on that bus.
I've been on that bus. They are just as good as gold.
My voice is not going to fall silent. I will go to my grave until a difference is made.
We reached out to parents that have lost kids, parents of kids that are being bullied all over the world, and it took off like wildfire.
All it takes is for one person to stand up.
Be the difference. Go out and find that one child, that new kid standing over there by himself. Be willing to stand up for him.
Everything starts with one and builds up. Eventually we have an army.
If we all do it together, we will change the world.
Okay, the film is rated PG-13. Now, some of the story behind the rating was that originally Bully was given an R rating by the MPAA. This is not the first time, I think, that the MPAA has dropped the ball over film ratings. And the Weinstein Company, which is the studio behind the film, was going to release it unrated, which is usually a practice done for films that were slapped with an NC-17. The reason why this film got an R rating was because of language. Just language. Now, those who've listened to the show, I've kind of taken the attitude of George Carlin's where there are no such things as bad words. Bad thoughts, bad intentions, and then there's words. And so the film was going to go unrated, and then a parenting organization, started asking folks to boycott the film, and which I hope doesn't happen. This was a film that was hard to watch, especially one who is a parent with a child who is 10. And it seems like it's a preaching to the choir documentary, like Bowling for Columbine, like Fahrenheit 9/11, or even An Inconvenient Truth. And the film follows several kids who are on the receiving end of various degrees of bullying. We hear one of them, of course, is the kid who's on the bus, and then there's one that's as far as who's made fun of because of sexual orientation. And there's probably the other reason why it got an R rating, because there's a couple, they call it disturbing images. There is a moment with one girl who is in lockup because she couldn't take it so much. She couldn't take it anymore, I should say, that she brought a gun with her on a bus. And as it's not a spoiler alert, but gun wasn't fired, but she was pushed that far. And of course, you heard in the trailer, and in the film, there's two stories of kids that took their life because they got pressed so hard. So it's a hard film to watch as a parent. And hopefully, those who don't have kids go and check this out as well. It's not a perfect film. From a technical standpoint, it's handheld, and there's a lot of kind of out of focus. It's not as nausea-inducing as, say, a Bourne film, or as some of the action films that do handheld. But there's a few moments of that are a little unsettling to the eye as a viewer, not to the content. And I'm intrigued to see if there will be a DVD, when the DVD and Blu-ray come out, what deleted scenes there are. I would have liked to have seen the filmmakers maybe try to talk to a bully. Because as many people say, somebody who is a bully is somebody who's probably being bullied, who has been bullied themselves in one way, shape, or form from somewhere. I would like to have seen that attempt happen. But I'm really hoping that this is a film that goes beyond the art house circuit. I know it's, I believe, playing in 3 theaters here in Indianapolis. There was an article in today's Star, as well as a Wire review, not a local review, but a Wire review. And I hope this is something that people will check out. When I say preaching to the choir, what I mean by that is the people that really need to see this will probably not see this film. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So, but I hope everybody goes and checks this out. And if you have a kid, go hold them afterwards. The question is, should you take your child to this? Well, I have a 10-year-old, and I'll talk to her about it. I'd like to show it to her. If anything, and this is not saying that my child is on the receiving end of this, but that a kid is not alone. I think the parenting organization is afraid that this will lead to fighting back or copycat incidents, or maybe they just had an issue with the language. I don't know. But if you don't show it to your kids, at least go see it and talk to your kids about this. That's, I think, the main goal. So do we have an audio response for this, Cobe? It's okay. If we have something, that's fine. Let's not.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking of the one with Ben Kingsley, and, well, I know why. Well, I know the context in which that line is said, so I'm not going to use that.
Okay.
So go see it, folks, whether you have kids or not. But be prepared. It's a tough watch. So, okay, we're going to shift gears for a little bit. We have a little bit of time. There's some titles that came out on DVD and Blu-ray. The big title this week is the Academy Award-winning film, The Iron Lady. Third time is a charm. That really made no sense since Meryl Streep's been nominated over a dozen times. This is her third win. But she won Best Actress earlier this year for playing Margaret Thatcher in her Rise to Power. And the film covers two aspects of it, her political rise to fame and her recently. And I know the film got a little bit of flack because some folks thought it painted her in an unflattering light in the early stages of dementia. But it does show the parallels, I guess, between a very powerful woman and a woman who is still solid in her convictions, even when she's out of office, even when she's struggling with dealing with the fact that her husband is not here, but she still sees him, among other things. So anyway, it's a solid performance. It's one of those, I think, the performance outshines the film, and it's definitely worth checking out. Also on Blu-ray this week, a film that I thought should have been nominated for Best Documentary, and it wasn't. One of our favorites here, Werner Herzog's Into the Abyss. Yeah, we want Werner Herzog on he's on our dream team of voiceover artists that should be here. Well, sometime we'll go over the list. Not today, but we'll go over the list of people that we want to. Maybe we should do a medley. We should find a sound medley of the actual voices of the people we want doing voiceover.
Not our half-ass impressions.
Yeah, not at all. So, but Into the Abyss is Werner Herzog's documentary about people on death row, and in particular, a guy who is on death row, and he talks to the people involved in a particular murder case. And it's kind of interesting to see Herzog at the very beginning talking to this guy. And Herzog says right off the bat that he doesn't like the guy, but he doesn't think he should be killed. So we already got the point of view from the filmmaker right away. But it follows the procedures and the people that get involved with somebody who is going to be executed off of a death row. Again, not a date film, but excellent filmmaking nonetheless. You know, the other documentary that Werner Herzog did last year, he did two, Cave of Forgotten Dreams and this one. Now, we got some old titles that came out on Blu-ray this week, and I highly recommend the 60th anniversary edition of A Streetcar Named Desire, which really shot Marlon Brando into the stratosphere of a superstar. Academy Awards for Vivian Leigh, Kim Hunter, and Indiana's own Carl Malden. Well worth checking out. It's from the 50s, Cobe, and the 50s were a different time.
They were a different time, but I've not seen that.
You know what? I will add that to the list. As soon as you get done comparing and contrasting, I'm going to get you Sucka and Black Dynamite, because that's what we do here at Film Sociology. Also have Bell Book and Candle, the witchy comedy with Kim Novak, Jimmy Stewart, and Jack Lemmon. There's a fun documentary, well, it'll be fun to look at the very least, Charlotte Rampling, The Look, which is about the English actress. She's more than 70s pretty, Cobe. And also, for some reason, if you need these titles on Blu-ray, Kate and Leopold, Bounce, Bounce is not bad. Bounce, Don Juan DeMarco, which has old, bloated Marlon Brando as opposed to young and thin Marlon Brando in Streetcar Named Desire. The Terrorist, which is Sean Connery versus Ian McShane, and The Truth About Cats and Dogs, which made Janine Garofalo a leading lady for about 10 minutes. And, of course, Uma Thurman. Fun date movie. All right, Kobe.
Yep.
We have some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Here it is. So quiet. Oh, there we go.
Here it is, folks. Your pledge dollars at work. So, Kobe, thanks for the cameo. Thanks to Rich. Thanks to Abdul and Emma for, we just played it again. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We gone.
We gone.